Welcome to episode 35 of the Golf Betting System podcast. This week we are covering the A military tribute at the Greenbrier on the PGA Tour and the Irish Open on the European Tour. This podcast is for listeners of 18 and above. I'm Steve Bamford, PGA Tour previewer at Golf Betting System, and with me we have European Tour expert Paul Williams. Evening to you, Paul.
Good evening, Steve. Good evening, Barry.
Spoiler alert, I'm here.
He's jumped the gun again. We also have podcast pundit, can you believe it, Barry O'Hanrahan. How you going, Barry? You all right?
I'm really good, guys. Yeah. Exciting week. It's like our fifth major.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
We've said, haven't we, the European Tour, that's leading the way in the next few weeks. Mm. So last week and this next, and then we're into the Open, so it's all good. Golfbettingsystem.co.uk, that's the website you can find all of our content at. Twitter handles for you. I'm at Bamford Golf. Paul is at Golf Betting. Barry is at A Good Talk Golf. We're available on Podbean, iTunes, TuneIn for Android, Player FM, Podtail. And last week we were added to Spotify, which is great news. Great for subscribers of Spotify like myself. Just tap in Golf Betting System into the Spotify search and all of our past and, of course, the current podcasts are available on Spotify. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, brilliant.
Naturally, subscribe or follow the podcast and tell your friends about the show. Please take time to rate and review us on iTunes. Some update on that, actually. We're up to 8 ratings on iTunes and we are scoring 5 stars. So it's all very, very good feedback. Keep it coming. It helps to keep the content free across our website, YouTube, and of course, this podcast. Should we quickly talk about last week? Clearly, it was a very exciting finish over in Paris. I read that there were 4 odds on players across the afternoon on Sunday.
Yeah, it was a good event all round, I think. I thoroughly enjoyed it, I must say. Nice little hors d'oeuvre for the Ryder Cup in 3 months or so's time. And nice to see how the course is shaping up. It's going to play a bit different, of course, when we get there in the end of September. It's likely to be nowhere near as firm and fast as it was this week just gone. Unless this dry spell that we're all experiencing at the moment continues for the whole of the summer, and then it could be proper fiery then.
Yeah, it's a fun golf course. I mean, it's challenging, but it has its fun aspects and its scoreable holes. And then it's just got that absolute beast of a finishing stretch.
Yeah, it's brutal.
We saw that pay put a few guys to bed, and Narn was sitting in the clubhouse or on the range. Happy days.
Yeah, he's got a habit, isn't he?
How many European Tour victories is that now for Narn?
That was his 10th. Yeah, that was his 10th, I believe. If you look at the last 3 he's got, so he won the Nedbank, when was that? Back end of 2016. And he shot 63 to win that on the final day, coming from behind. And it was Wang, wasn't it? He beat, and he caught him up and overtook him. And then, Wentworth last year, when I was on him, and I'd virtually given up, and then he shot 62 the final day to win that, and beat Francesco Molinari, didn't he, that day? And then, yesterday, it wasn't quite to the same extent, was it? But even so, he posted a total in the clubhouse that the guys couldn't stick with, and Julian Surrey, he was in position, didn't hold on at the 18th. Chris Wood was in the lead and then tied for the lead, and just couldn't keep it going at the back end of the back end of that tricky finish, as you say, Barry. So another event for Norren, another win for Norren. Was he up to 14th in the world, something like that? Now it's very good record he's got.
And that Honda Classic link we spoke about in the podcast last week is cast iron again, isn't it? Because Norren finished 2nd or 3rd there this year. We know that Russell Knox, who again backdoor 2nd place last week, he's won at PGA National Honda Classic.
Yeah.
So that's a really...
I
said to you this morning, when I look at that golf course, the Golf National, it does remind me of PGA National. Just the way it formats, the way it sets up, and it's not, you don't get that gnarliness in Florida, but you do the course is there is a lot of similarities.
Wait, and they're proper tricky courses, aren't they?
So, windswept as well, aren't they?
Yeah. I know it was windy for the first couple of days, which really brought the really brought that to the fore over Thursday and Friday this week, and it made it a really tricky test, as it should be. But bear in mind, Noren came into the weekend at 3 over par and shot 10 under over the weekend to win at 7 under. That's a good performance from him. And we talked about him briefly last week, didn't we? And I kind of swerved away from him because he was 16-1. But you live and learn, don't you? He ticked virtually every box I was looking at. Just you kind of get put off by the price with some of these players, and justified it in the end. Although, as you say, a number of players with a competent finish at the end over the final four holes could have taken that title in the end. So. Yeah, exciting, definitely.
You landed Matthew Southgate at 200-1, didn't you? So that's another great boost for your profit and loss.
Yeah.
Four each-way plays.
Yeah, it was a nice result.
One of those sneaky, horrible, backdoor top seven results.
Yeah. They're not sneaky and horrible when they land in your lap, are they? But do you know what? He had a chance to win it as well. You look back and he was 6 under par playing the 17th hole. And the 17th wasn't as tough as some of those holes coming home, and he bogeyed that. A birdie there, par to finish, that's a playoff, and the way he played that final round, he put himself in with a chance. At the start of the day, you wouldn't have given that. But if you look at where, over the course of the week, I was absolutely screaming at the telly or the laptop, whichever it was at the time, because he kept getting himself into a strong position and around, and then he'd just blow it. Time after time after time. I think he was 5 over par on the par 5 ninth over the first 3 days. And level par for those 3 days, he wins the tournament.
That's a great hole, that is.
Oh, it is a great hole.
I'm looking forward to that at the ride.
Yeah, it is a great hole. And for a par 5, it's not a straightforward par, let alone a straightforward birdie. But to be 5 over for 3 attempts, it was rather galling. And then he'd got a quad in there, he'd got a treble in there over the first 3 days. And you're looking at these numbers that he's racked up and you're thinking, one of those, just one of those holes where he's had an absolute disaster. You take that away, he's in the playoff. Or he's won the tournament at 200-1. But yes.
Must have birdied a fair.
Oh, yeah, yes.
it was boom or bust.
Yeah, if you take a look at his scorecard, apart from the 9th through the 12th, his scorecard for the week is absolutely immaculate. Apart from that 17th hole on the Sunday, the rest of it is just birdies and pars. It was really, really clean. And then you've got this spell in the middle around the turn where it just kind of fell apart each day. It's bizarre. But, he's a good fit for those firm, fast, almost linksy-type courses. He'll be very popular this week as well. Whether he can go and produce back-to-back performances is the question that punters need to ask themselves this week. But it's a difficult one to scrub off the list, which we'll talk about when
Francesco
we get there.
Molinari won in the States, his first victory on the PGA Tour.
Impressive.
He closed in style.
Yeah, wow.
So I think I rejected him on price. So
yeah. Yeah, 22s and 16s, but if you look, an awful lot of people bagged the double on our Facebook group last night, judging by some of the comments and the big screenshots I saw of some of the wins. So clearly a lot of people have gone down that route, and fair play to them. Well done if you managed to get one or t'other or even both of those players up for the week. Good start.
Two wins in his last four events and a second, so he's playing 20-1. In retrospect, isn't a bad price potentially.
No, nice.
It was a particularly crap field for the PGA Tour.
But even so,
if he was going to win one,
it
was going to be that one. Mm. Tiger was too far away, and when you're being challenged by Ryan Armour and these kind of guys, Benjamin Bronson, Bronson Begoon.
Bronson Begoon. Is he not striking fear into the heart of Frankie Molinari?
But even so, he finished 8 under in the final round. Yeah. That deserves a victory, isn't it? So this idea again that some American journalists keep putting out there that this Ryder Cup is going to be an absolute walkover for the Americans. I think it's I think they're just, they're playing with us with these, I think they're tickling us a little bit with these kind of views that they're putting out there.
But, well, yeah,
you've got the likes of Molinari and Noren strengthening that team.
Mm.
It's starting to look very strong, I think, from a European perspective.
Yeah, I mean, we talked, you know, we kind of said, why is Molinari playing in the States and not over on the Rolex Series event over in France? And, you know, whilst he justified that, it was interesting to see. He got a nice little nod from Thomas Bjorn on Twitter afterwards to say well done. And
he's in, isn't he? At the end of the day, he said in an interview after round two, well, why are you playing here? And he said, well, I saw it on TV last year. And I just like the look of the golf course. And when you do look at that Potomac course, although I don't think they're going to play there again, I said to you last week, a couple of pictures I saw on Twitter, it could have been Wentworth.
Yeah, yeah. There were certain elements of it, weren't there? So clearly fitted his eye very nicely indeed.
Man. He was just ploughing it in, wasn't he? I mean, his numbers last week were absolutely on. You know, fourth for fairways hit and first for greens in regulation. 86.1% greens in rig.
Yeah.
And he was 17th for strokes gained putting. So, you know, you're going to win on
it. But he was also first for proximity as well by 7 or 8 foot. It was just...
He was second for proximity.
Oh, second, yeah. Okay. It was just...
Oh, it doesn't matter, does it? Second. But yeah, it was crazy.
So number. Impressive to watch. Like,
So he's hitting it close, he's putting well, and he's hitting 86% of greens.
Yeah, you win the tournament. You
might as well have switched off after about an hour of the coverage you let yesterday.
Yeah, but you know what? He fit in that bill of that kind of question I now have in my head, is who has the most motivation or the most reasons to be maximum motivation for the week. And his was, I need to improve my FedEx Cup ranking and get it sorted. And he was,
and he knew,
and he said he was putting up a big sacrifice, the French Open, in order to do this. That equals maximum motivation, and he just he ran away with it. It was so impressive to watch, and
sometimes you get these signals, don't you, Barry?
It was.
We actually said last week, didn't we? Why the hell is he playing this? Oh, he's playing it because he has to.
Yeah.
But actually, he was playing it because he wants to get a win in America and send a message to Bjorn, and he did it in style. Fair play.
Yeah, it was really impressive. And you wonder whether this is a could be a psychological step up for him now, that he can play on. I mean, that's he's gonna feel on top of the world, and somebody striking the ball that well heading into, you know, Open Championship in a couple of weeks' time.
Yep.
You know, he's certainly one to keep an eye on, and you can be, I would say, with, you know, pretty strong confidence, a lot of the bookies will have forgotten about him in a couple of weeks' time, and you could find him out at 40-1.
He's certainly playing very well indeed, isn't he? As you said, Steve, that's two wins in quick succession now, isn't it? And two decent wins as well, with it being the BMW PGA at Wentworth as well.
And don't forget, he finished second at his home event in Italy.
Yep.
So, you know, first, second, 20-something at the US Open, and first again. He's at the top of his peak of his powers. He's probably the best he's ever played. So he gets a 3-year exemption on the PGA Tour for that invitational status victory. So, you know, when it comes to next year potentially, or even maybe, you know, some events in the playoffs, he could be one to look out for, especially something like the Players' Championship next year, where we know he plays particularly well on those golf courses. He's clearly got confidence now that he can win in America. Right, Irish Open.
Yes.
Talk us through it, Paul. This has to be the lead tournament this week for obvious reasons.
Yeah, it's another biggie, isn't it? Another
good event.
Another good event. This is the second of this little mini-series of Rolex Series events. So we've got the Scottish Open next week, and that will complete the trio before we hit the Open Championship, which is only about a fortnight away now, so... time to start studying about the Open Championship, I think. So yes, so this is another Rolex Series event. Obviously, Alex Noren banged his name onto the extended or growing list of winners last week. Actually, he won the first one going back last year, so it's twice he's won that. And Rahm's won two of them as well. So you're starting to get a view of these Rolex events, aren't we? That these are good quality players who are winning these events. As they're coming up. It's also, this week, it's another one of these major qualifying series events. So, like we had last week, and we had over at the Quicken Loans as well, You get another three people from the top 10 here who aren't already qualified are going to find their way into the Open Championship this week as well. So nice little incentive for some of the players who are here this week contending the tournament. So this is Irish Open. It's hosted by Rory McIlroy. It's interesting, actually, they're changing the format next year. So Rory's been looking after this, his foundation, for the last few years. But over the next few years going forward, they're going to adopt the British Masters format for this. So they're going to nominate an Irish or Northern Irish host, effectively, for each subsequent tournament. And they'll take it to their home or nominated course over the next few years. So we're going to see a variety of different tracks and a variety of different hosts over the next few years. So that'll be an interesting little twist. I think that worked well for the British Masters, actually. Nice to see the likes of Rose and Westy and Poulter, haven't we? And Luke Donald take the initiative with these events. And we'll see some of Ireland's finest over the next few years do the same with the Irish Open as well.
Decent.
Yeah, no, it's a good move, I think.
Good idea, yeah.
I think just looking at the market this week, the thing to say, and we've probably been spoilt with the Irish Open over the last few years, particularly with Rory being involved, because he's managed to drag some of the big names over from America. But there's other than John Rahm and myself, you know, you're looking at just a pretty standard top end European Tour event this week. There's none of these big names that have come over to play, which is a bit of a shame. So you've got Rory at 7-1, Rahm at 15-2 head in the market, and then you're down to the kind of what you kind of class as the, you know, more standard European Tour players. So you, well, you know, top end players like the likes of Cabrera Bello and Matt Fitzpatrick, Andy Sullivan, Shane Lowry, Tuur Bjørn Olsen, those kind of players who are around about the 20-25 mark. But yeah, so I guess similar to last week, a little bit disappointing in terms of the in terms of the attendance, but hey ho, we deal with the the players event can only beat those that are put in front of them, I guess.
Can I stop you quickly?
Mm.
Sorry to be a pain. Did you guys see last week? You know, you recognise that the world number two was playing at the Open de France.
Yeah.
Justin Thomas. Did you see the European Tour didn't capture any of his statistics?
Mm. Yeah,
really.
That is just unbelievable.
Yeah, they could have put a guy on him just to monitor what he was doing.
That is shoddy, isn't it?
Is that because he wasn't registered in their systems or something? I mean, that's
who knows. I don't know.
Wow. I think he has to be a fully fledged European Tour player for them to send someone out and capture his stats, or
you're
at least to publish
them.
They just don't publish it. So whether there's someone there capturing the stats and it's just not published because he's not a European Tour player, or whether they literally just let him get on with it, who knows? But as Steve said, there's no data for him.
Bad, isn't it? Anyway, sorry. I thought I'd just chip that in.
Yeah, you're not impressed, Steve, I take it.
No, I hate it. I absolutely hate it. It's amateur hour for me.
Yeah, well, he played quite well. You can put that in.
I couldn't tell you what he did well or what he didn't, but he clearly finished in the top 10, which I thought was a half decent performance.
Yeah,
from Tom.
Not bad for his first stab at the course.
Absolutely.
So this.
But sorry, you cracked.
No. So yes, we're at the Ballyliffin Golf Club, the Glashidi Links. Is that how you pronounce it, Barry?
Galshidi.
Galshidi. There you go. Completely wrong from my perspective. I'll call it Ballyliffin. It's quite.
It's Galshidi. You have a okay. I'm confused now, because you and your preview have a Glash. Anyway,
we'll
double confirm what's my date.
Yeah, we'll call it Ballyliffin. I could well have spelt it incorrectly in the draft I've done there, Barry. So 7,462 yard par 72. It's a proper links on the County Donegal coastline. So when I talk proper links, you know, it's undulating fairways, penal bunkering. Thick rough if you're outside of the straight and narrow, but generally these links tracks are generally wide enough to play. And as we know with these links setups, the difficulty of the course is generally down to the condition of the course and also the the weather that you experience over the course of the 4 days. So the course is going to be firm and fast. We're experiencing a long, dry, warm spell in the UK and Ireland at the moment. And it's the same over there. So the track is going to be firm. It is going to be fast. It's not going to be overly hot, particularly on Thursday. Actually, it's not going to get much above 60 degrees Fahrenheit, but then it's going to start to warm up again over the weekend. But it is going to stay dry. The big thing this week is to protect the track. It needs some wind, and we're really not going to see that if the forecast that I'm looking at is correct. You know, you're kind of looking at 5 to 10 mile an hour winds all the way through, and if that's the case, then as is often the case with these Lynx tracks, they're just there for the taking for the professionals, which is a bit of a shame, really, because you want some challenge, you want some proper challenge for the for the likes of the Irish Open, and any of these big Lynx events need a bit of wind, I think, to keep the players honest. Trying to get any history for the course in terms of professional, I mean, the course has been around for a long time, but trying to get any history of the professionals having played the track is tricky. The only event they have played, or the men have played, is the 2002 West of Ireland Challenge on the European Tour back in 2002. So you're going back a long time. It was an alternate event as well against, I think it ran alongside the USPGA that week. So the field was quite weak, or very weak, in comparison to a standard European Tour event that week as well. So difficult to read a great deal into it. It was won by a guy called Adam Mednick at 7 under, and he won by 5 shots on that week. And only 5 players finished under par. But I think the thing to consider that week is that there was a lot of wind about. They had to stop play a few times because it was too windy for the guys to play there. So as to how much you can read into the event that week, difficult to say, really, because we're not going to experience similar kind of conditions this week. Before I go on, I know you've played the course, Barry. What's... Any snippets of information that you can tell us at this stage about how it plays?
Well, yeah, first of all, you'd think I would remember the name of the course having played it, but I was up in that part of Donegal for a wedding, and the day we played it, I was, not the day after the wedding, but it was a little bit hungover in the pre-wedding celebrations, I guess. So it is the Glashidi Lynx.
Glashidi,
yeah. So from memory, it has a lot more up and down and undulations, undulations in the fairways, but elevation changes than it appears on say their website and the flyovers, and just knowing Pat Ruddy designed golf courses myself, and from the memory of playing it a few years ago, I definitely have it in my mind that a premium on approach play this week, and very much as well on your short game. Pat Ruddy, really, his courses tend to really challenge those parts of your games in particular. So those would be things that I'd have in mind when kind of looking to make my picks for the week.
Yeah. I mean, look, again, I say it's difficult to read into those stats from 2002 because the conditions were pretty extreme, but the guys at the top were hitting, they were struggling to hit 40% of fairways. It was that tricky from off the tee. Yet they were still managing from there to get, circa high 60s in terms of greens and regulation. And it seemed to come down that week to performance on and around the green. So that kind of backs up what you're saying to a degree. And that, I guess it's essentially from your second shot and in as to how it's going to pan out during the course of the week.
Mm-hmm. One thing I will say, I know the wind is forecast to not be particularly strong, but it is right on the coast, and having played an awful lot of Lynx golf, no matter what the forecast says on wind strength, the wind around Lynx golf courses just seems to have that extra kind of quality to it, or extra little bit of strength in it, that just I'd almost liken it to more torque rather than the actual power of the wind. So I don't think they'll have... it's not going to be completely benign, and they will have something to deal with. And if the wind... It's kind of an unusual direction, it's forecast northwest on Thursday. So it's going to make the course play quite different than the way it's designed. And some holes could play particularly tough compared to their the intended design, and others could be, you know, you might see a few drivable par fours this week, even though they are quite long. The ground is running very firm and fast after the dry spell here the last few weeks. So you're going to, you know, guys are going to be baffled with the run out distance of some of their tee shots.
Yeah, you mentioned the wind direction. It is interesting, actually, because this has changed from when I first started looking at the back end of last week. Because at the back end of last week, it suggested it was all going to come from the east, which, you know, given given where the course actually is on the coastline, you're thinking, well, that's, you know, it's going to make it particularly benign, effectively. But it has switched. It is coming from the northwest on Thursday, switching to the northeast on Friday. And then during the course of the day on Saturday, it's going from southeast to southwest. And then on Sunday, it's coming from the west and moving back to the northwest. So you're going to have this scenario, if that's correct, where the wind direction is shifting literally all the way through the 4 days. And what could be a downwind hole in the morning on Friday could be, complete opposite by the afternoon. Mm. And the difference between days could be pretty stark as well. Although it's not strong, as you say, but northwesterly coming into the position on the course there, I wouldn't be surprised if that is a little bit more severe than the forecast would suggest.
Yeah, that's going to be a tough enough wind to play around, especially like, what, 19, 20 kilometres an hour? That's that'll give you a lot to think about.
Yeah, it's an interesting point. And for me, I think it's not going to play silly tough. It's not going to play to the kind of degree that we saw back in 2002, where only five players were breaking par. I suspect it's going to be far lower scoring than that. I suspect still that the emphasis is going to be on how players perform, as you said, with the approach shots, but also on and around the greens. And I wouldn't be at all surprised to see some of the best putters start to come to the fore over the course of the 4 days. It could well be a mix of those guys and some of the greens and regulation merchants who can continue to churn out high numbers of greens during the course of the 4 days. It's an interesting one because the forecast is changing, and it has changed my view on where I was going to head to it from the back end of last week. So I've kind of ripped up some of my initial thoughts and kind of back to the drawing board as of this morning. But I've backed two players so far. Firstly, I am going to stick with Paul Dunn. I backed him last week and he finished 21st. So it wasn't a disaster. That was the first event he'd played for nigh on 4 weeks. So, a little bit of rust to shake off. He also talked in an interview about not being jaded, not being tired, because he had taken some time. And I think that's, potentially a good move as he heads towards these really big events, and particularly for him this week. You know, I've read some of the interviews from himself about how he feels about the Irish Open, about it being his fifth major, as you said right at the start. And he, for me, has got the right kind of game. If it is going to be a short game and putting prowess that really comes to the fore over the course of the 4 days, then I think that he could be one of the kind of guys who's right up there. I think last week it was probably a little bit tough for him. If you look at his British Masters win, that was at 20 under par. There were birdies to be made there, and last week was far more of a grind, particularly for the first couple of days. So 21st day, I don't think was a particularly bad performance from him, and I think that's almost like his warm up for this week, which is the big important week from his perspective in the short term, and of course the Open Championship in a couple of weeks' time. Again, he's been in some decent form over the last few months. So 33-1, I'm getting 7 each way with Coral right now. I thought was more than fair price on a player who wouldn't be out of kilter with the names that we've talked about before with these Rolex Series events. I think, similar justification to last week. I think he's the kind of player that could win this level of event. The other guy that I've backed so far, and I'm sure I'm going to need to find some players somewhere between the two extremes here, because from 33-1 for Dunn, I've gone to 250-1 with 7 places with Coral again, with the Frenchman Mathieu Pavon. Now, Pavon, the reason you're getting a decent price on him is he's missed six cuts in his last eight events. But within that, you'll find that he finished 25th at the US Open. He was sixth after round one. And this was the guy who'd gone there, and he was one of these players who was, you know, almost written off. He was in a two-horse race with Alex Levy for top Frenchman, and Levy was strong odds on to beat him in the two-horse race, and Pavon walked it, absolutely walked it. So he was sixth after round one at Shinnecock. He finished 25th altogether. We know it was firm and fast there. And he's the kind of player, if you look through his record, there's lots of miscuts in there, but the sparks of life, the signs of life, have tended to come on courses you might find some correlation for this. So if you go back earlier this season, he finished 28th in Qatar, which often plays quite linksy. He's third for greens in regulation that week, 84.7%, which is nice and strong. Going back to Dubai last year, the Earth course, he topped the field for putting that week. He finished 13th overall. And again, being a desert track, it's going to be firm and fast. He finished 5th in Mauritius, which is an exposed and almost linksy type track, the week after, or the event after. So there's some kind of snippets of correlating form there that I think you could link into this week. Third last year at the Scottish Open at Dundonald, I think it was last year, wasn't it, for the Scottish?
I just saw that.
Yeah. Sixth at the Nordea Masters, and that was played at the Barsbäck track, which is a mix of parkland and seaside track. And again, it's long, firm. He topped greens in regulation that week. And also, just going back through, Morocco, he finished 13th, but he was second for putting on the bent base greens there. This is a bent and local grass mix, as it was last week, actually, in France. So you've got a bent base, and then you've got, obviously, the local indigenous grasses that have blown in over the years. So in terms of Morocco, second for putting there, he finished 13th overall. The Open to Portugal, he finished fourth for putting, third overall. And again, that was another bent grass-based putting surface. So he's got a mix here of strong greens in regulation, coastal form, firm and fast form, being able to putt on the right kind of putting surfaces. He's going to need to bring it all together, clearly, to get himself into the top seven. But at 250-1, I felt that was worth taking, and certainly a risk worth taking for 250-1 with seven places being paid. There are a few bookies going out there with eight places. It's now just gone 6:30 on Monday, and the market's still coming up. But I'm seeing the likes of, I'll just get this right before I read it out, the likes of Paddy Power and Boyle Sports both gone eight places each way, a fifth of the odds. For this event this week, so well worth having a look around at the odds that are available with some of these bookies when you place your bets. But yeah, both of those guys I've done with Coral, who are 7 1/5 this week. I need to go and decide if I'm going to take some of the guys on at the top of the market. McIlroy and Rahm, either of those could win the event, but you're not getting much back for kind of a 7-1 shot on either of those guys. And I don't know, it's almost at the point where if one of them wins, then so be it, then, you know, we're playing for places. But you know, I don't think either of them are absolute shoo-ins for this event. And you know, Rory's got the hosting duties to go with. John Rahm is defending. There's, you know, there's complications for both of these guys. And yeah, we shall see. Anyone catch your eye so far on this, Barry?
I was really impressed with Rahm last week, because I know it was brought up on the show that the Le Golf National might not be the kind of test that he could have the patience for. Yes, he had his ups and downs like everybody else, but you know, I was for one pretty impressed with his finish for the week.
Yeah, it was good. He had a chance to win, didn't he? You know, coming down the stretch, he was in position, and as with a few of them, with a stronger final few holes, he could have taken the title. So,
you know, I know he's defending this week, but it's also a new golf course to them as well, so it won't quite feel like a regular defense, I guess. You know, he'll just have that little fresh aspect to it. It's kind of. I do like Paul Dunne as a shout. I might have to actually go and stick with him again.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably a bit of patriotism in that bet if I do follow it as well.
But I think, you know, aside from that, I think he's got the right game to tackle it. If it's going to be about short game and putting as, you know, some of the real key factors this week. And equally, I think he wants to win this event. You know, it's all the Irish guys are going to absolutely do the damnedest to win this. But I think he fits.
Somebody else probably, like, I'm not so sure about the short, you know, the guys at the top, you know. Again, like, you've Rafa Cabrera-Bello, but I would never love him at 20s, you know. And he did.
He could place. You know, my notes, my kind of summary with Cabrera-Bello is he can and probably will place. And if you want to take 8 places on him at 20-1, you may well get a return out of it. It won't make you rich, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him in the mix. But as you say, he did miss the cut last week, didn't he? So
yeah, and
his price hasn't grown as a result, has it? Yeah. He was 20-1 last week. Now you can argue about strength of field, blah blah blah. But you'd expect to see something bigger, wouldn't you? Or off the back of a missed cut.
Yeah.
But clearly, he has got a good links history, hasn't he?
He has.
But he never wins nearly enough.
No. And he's defending next week. So again, you could argue that there's that element as a positive, actually, in terms of him kind of freewheeling through this week. But it's 20-1. It's just not an attractive price point, is it?
Yeah, but looking outside the kind of top few and heading towards the short medium odds, you know, Chris Wood had a great week last week. Is time and time again shows his pedigree on links golf courses, and he's available at 40-1 8 places.
Yeah, he's very very close to my final team. I haven't backed him. I read some of the interviews with him and some of the ones clearly watched over the weekend, but I've read the transcripts of some of them, and he talked about being or needing a couple of days of complete rest after that test in France, and his game not quite being where he wants it to be. Now, it's interesting because he's saying, you know, my game's not quite there, yet he had a fantastic chance to win a very high-profile event over the weekend. So his game clearly can't be in particularly bad shape.
Mm-hmm.
He has got a record of maintaining his form as well. It's a tough one.
I mean, he could just be playing a little psychological trick on himself to not let himself get comfortable. He knows he's playing well. I mean, the results proved it there last week. He's just maybe trying not to let himself get too comfortable in it, thinking that he is just playing well, but, you know, just to try to keep pushing himself forward. And I think, like, 40-1 for somebody who's played very well last week and has a links pedigree, that's a really good price. Somebody else who's a great ball striker and does have good links form as well is Peter Uihlein, who's also available at 40-1 8 places. He was top 15 in the Irish Open last year. So, you know, clearly comfortable with the locality and possibly the odd pint of Guinness or two in between rounds. So, yeah, those two guys have my interest for sure.
He's been playing well at PGA Tour level as well, hasn't he, Uihlein? So, again, there's another that ticks a lot of boxes.
I think he'll definitely fancy this. And, you know, again, back to the... You know, his one of his best mates, Brooks Koepka, won the US Open there a few weeks ago. So, you know, there's that tenuous link there. But, little factors like that can be the little extra, the one or two shot difference come the end of the week.
Yeah, you're right. Another one who continues to catch my eye is Jorge Campillo, who is playing very, very... He's got to win something soon. He's got to win something. Putting really well as well. And there's a bit of 66 available with him. Again, he's another one who's very close. Matthew Southgate, who I backed last week, he's been currently backed off the boards, and I can see, you know, it's pretty clear why. He's finished, I think it's fourth and second in his last two Irish Opens. He's got a couple of top 12, a sixth and a 12th, isn't he, at the Open Championship, fifth last week. I'm not going to back him. I haven't backed him and I won't back him because when I've gone through his history, he very rarely performs back to back.
Yeah, you get a lot of them, don't you?
Yeah, he can pop up, and when it makes sense for him to pop up, like last week, you can bag yourself a decent return on him each way. I don't think he's quite ready to win yet, and I think he proved that again last week, because at that point in time when he did have that chance to you know, birdie two incredibly difficult holes, yeah, I'll give you that, to put himself in a position to win, he didn't muster it. But he's gone from 200 to 1 last week. He opened at 90, I saw, was the best price, and he's currently been back down. He's 50 to 1 in places, and he'll probably be back down to that kind of 66 to 1 maximum level, I'd imagine, by the time they start on Thursday. And I just got enough reservations to leave him alone this week.
He could be worth a look for first round leader.
I think he could be worth a look at the Open. He could be worth a look at the Scottish if he plays for four consecutive weeks. He may well have a week off next week. We'll have to see. He could well be worth a look. In my mind, I would quite like him to miss the cut this week, take next week off, and then pick him up at 250s for the Open Championship and get yourself a nice each-way place out of him.
Just mentioning first round leader, do you have any of your stats done this week? Because one name just kind of shot off the sheet at me. He has a really great Irish Open record, and has been reasonably solid the last few weeks. Bradley Dredge.
Yeah, Dredge. I put him up on Facebook the week before as one of my first round leader picks that week, and clearly did nothing. And then last week he was first round leader, wasn't he? Steve sent me a nice note to remind me of the fact on Thursday evening as well, which
that's what friends are for, isn't it?
It's the way of the warrior. Always happens, mate.
Didn't
week after itis.
Yeah, didn't you back him last week, Paul? Yes, but he's one of those first round leader regulars, and you know, we've talked about these kind of first round leader auto bet players that you can put out there. He has got a great record in Ireland as well. I absolutely wouldn't put you off him one bit. But no, to answer your question, the stats will be out later tomorrow afternoon. But I think they'll look favourable for Dredge. And what kind of price are we looking?
So he's 125.
Yeah, 125 outright. So he's going to be circa 100 to 1 with most of the bookies for first round leader. And when we get an idea of the draw, where he sits in that, if there's any bias, he may well be worth picking up in that market for sure. But yes, that's kind of where I am, Steve, right now with the Irish Open.
Should we talk Greenbrier?
Yeah, let's go for it.
A military tribute at the Greenbrier. That's the official title of this.
Is this because they've got no sponsor?
I think they should have called it "We Have No Sponsor at the Greenbrier." And that'd probably been a more realistic approach. But yes, I take it they haven't got a sponsor. I think it used to be sponsored by the actual Greenbrier Resort. But not this year, it would appear. It's always one of these events. It's patchy. It's similar to last week, really. It's played at White Sulphur Springs, which is in West Virginia. It's in the kind of the foothills or quite... it's at a fair altitude in the Appalachians, on that east side of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And the course itself, it's a par 70. It features very wide fairways, so it's a bit of a different beast to last week. 7,286 yards, which are altitude of around about 2,000 feet. They can gobble up quite easily. Interesting factors for me: big greens,
mm-hmm,
and pure bent grass greens. So this tournament does have a real record of throwing up people that can putt well, that actually get the job done.
Yeah, I noticed that on the stats, actually. Putting looks pretty critical this week, doesn't it?
Even last year with Xander, he won his first PGA Tour title. If you remember, it's interesting what you said about that Pavon chap.
Mm.
You often get guys that do well at US Open and then pop up a few tournaments later, don't they?
Yeah.
And Schauffele did the same last year. But he was 45th for strokes gained putting when he won this last year on the PGA Tour stats. and he was also in the top 15 for greens in regulation when it came to my rolling 10-week analysis. So a guy that was putting well, that was hitting tons of greens, and sure enough, he came in at 66-1. 2 years before that, because 2016 there was no event, it was Danny Lee that did the same. He was 35th for strokes gained putting in the PGA Tour stats at that point. And he arrived off a, I think it was something along the lines of 25th at the Travelers. I tell you what I see here in terms of form. I'll go back the last four winners. Jonas Blixt, he'd missed the cut at Tigers tournament. 43rd at the Travelers, 2nd at the Nordea Masters in Sweden, 11th at Colonial. And Angel Cabrera in 2014 had finished 24th at Tigers National Tournament and 11th at the Travelers. Danny Lee, 25th at the Travelers, miscut. And Xander had finished 36th at Tigers Tournament, 14th at the Travelers and 5th at the US Open. And those respective prices were 125, 100, 150 and 66-1.
Tasty.
And if we go back before that, Ted Potter Jr. won it and he came straight off a web.com event where he'd finished 51st. So again, it's where last year, the last week, you could actually see some results where someone like a Justin Rose had finished 12th at the US Open and won Tigers tournament.
Yeah.
The last few renewals, there was nothing like that. It was all kind of wacky, wild stuff. With this event, no one to this point has come in here with anything even approaching a top 10 and winning the tournament. There also seems to be something about players that literally needed to have played the week before.
Yeah.
So in that case, we're talking Potomac last week. And there's probably something in there as well about players that played reasonably well, got a couple of, you know, decent, nice rounds in at the Travelers.
Mm-hmm.
Although I wouldn't say that's 100% watertight. You know, Potter Jr. won and he hadn't even played at the Travelers. So, but for me, I again, it's one of those awkward weeks where, you know, chasing the short prices probably isn't the best thing to do here.
Mm.
And I don't see a precedent like last week with Molinari where we had short price elite winners before at this. So, you know, I'm seeing Finau 14-1 favourite. I mean, that has as much attraction to me as probably watching Neighbours. And I don't regularly watch Neighbours.
It used to be good when I was a lad.
At university, maybe, Paul, when you had a bit of time on your hands, not playing those fruit machines. But yes, Tony Finau 14-1. I just don't see that. I tell you what I also don't see about Tony Finau, and he probably wins by six, is, you know, we're talking about natural-born putters. And whatever statistics or just the look and feel I get about Tony, I wouldn't call him a natural putter as such. Then we've got the likes of Bubba, Phil Mickelson, Webb Simpson at 18-1. I'm sure he'll be tipped. Russell Henley has had a couple of top six or seven finishes here the last two events. But looking at Russell then, he wasn't coming in off a top six finish at the Travelers and a US Open performance. So again, 20-1 about Russell Henley, I'm not so sure. The defending champion Xander is at the best price of 20-1. He played clearly very well at the US Open. Could put up a stern defence, but his, I don't know, he just doesn't fill me with much enthusiasm. And then I'm down to the Wunderkid. Joachim Niemann, who has been sliced to bits by the bookmakers this week at 25-1.
That's poor.
I've seen 28-1 with Bet365 if I wanted to take that price. So I'm going to have a think about it overnight. It's going to be one of those do I back him till he dies type affairs.
Mm.
With Joachim, it's interesting because his stats aren't available on the PGA Tour website, and I was telling you this, Paul.
Yeah.
Because he's been slotted in there as a special temporary member.
Yeah.
And, you know, they don't show his numbers. And so I've gone to the trouble of looking into his numbers just to see where he kind of sits.
Hmm.
Clearly grew up in Chile, played lots of altitude golf out there around Santiago and places like that. because it is at altitude. So I've got no problems about that whatsoever. He actually played here last year, Joachim, as an amateur. So I think this is half the reason his price has been absolutely slaughtered. We were on him last week, weren't we? And he started the tournament well. He was 11th at halfway. And for whatever reason, I know he was in the group following Tiger. I don't know if that had anything to do with it. But he shelled an awful round on Saturday. A couple of doubles in three bogeys in about a seven-hole stretch.
Yeah.
Apart from that, he was absolutely fantastic across the whole tournament. And he finished with a 65 yesterday, which was the second best round on Sunday behind Francesco. So he's clearly playing some very good golf. He was 29th here last year as an amateur. He shot 68, 68, 64, but he had another bad Saturday and finished, he shot 75 last year at this. So 68, 68, 75, 64. Take away that 75 and put a par in there of 70. I doubt if he was a million miles away from paying Blazes.
Yeah. And, you know, he's clearly learning his trade, wasn't he? He's still an amateur at that point in time. So, you know, you can excuse him one bad round. You can excuse most of the professionals one bad round on most events because that's what you get. So, he'll learn.
But it just seems a little extreme for me. He was 50-1 last week and he finished 17th. And they've halved his price.
They're taking no chances with him at all, are they?
Well, they're worried about the guy, aren't they? Anyway, these stats. You know, I love a stat, don't I? Joachim Niemann. I am seeing him. If you work out his strokes gained numbers for his appearances this season, where they've been recorded, he is sitting at third for strokes gained putting, which is pretty phenomenal.
Mm.
And he's sixth for birdie average. So at a course where putting is phenomenally important, and we said last year about Xander, he was a fantastic ball striker who was hitting tons of greens and could putt well. I mean, the perfect scenario, isn't it?
Yeah.
Joachim sits atop my 10-week greens in regulation tracker, sixth for birdie average and third for strokes gained putting at a tournament where traditionally most of the elite players don't do very well.
Mm.
So I'm toying with that one.
Yeah, it's just the price, isn't it? That's the.
I might just have to take 28-1 and get on with it. Because last week I rejected a guy that I fancied quite a lot on the basis that the price wasn't good enough. And he walked it. Mm. So I don't know. We then got the likes of Harmon Holmes. At bigger prices, I'm definitely very, very interested in Anibane Lahiri. And it's interesting because Unibet have chalked him up at 70-1. They actually chalked him up at 90-1 this morning and that lasted about 15 minutes.
Yeah.
He's at 70 with Unibet and everywhere else I'm seeing 50-1.
Yeah.
I'm seeing a little bit of 60-1. Now, I like Lahiri on the basis that he's putting very, very well at the moment. And his last two tournaments, he's been playing very, very good golf. So, I think he shot three rounds last week in the top 10 when you look at the performances on the day.
Mm.
And he threw in a 75 on the Friday, so that in the end he finished 13th. And then the week before at the Travellers, if you remember, he went out in the final group the second from last group at the Travellers with JB Holmes and finished ninth. So he's playing some great golf, Lahiri. And I just, in a way, a guy of his calibre in a field like this playing well, when you see, I think I've totaled up 18 professional wins Lahiri's got across three different tours, of course.
There's a lot of them in his hometown, isn't there?
And the European tour. Mm. Pardon?
There's a lot of them in his on his home tour, but even so, you've still got to be of a certain capability. To be able to consistently get over the line. And he's not that old either, Lahiri. He's probably younger than you'd expect.
And I've read a few interviews, and he had one a couple of years ago at Colonial when he'd only just touched down on the PGA Tour. I think he was another one of these guys that got special temporary membership and worked his way in.
Yeah.
And he finished sixth at Colonial. par 70 tree lined like this week. I haven't got any issues at all about his altitude play either, because I think he finished fifth or sixth a couple of years ago at Crans, yep, at the European Masters. Mm-hmm. So he can clearly get his head around the mathematics of how far the ball needs to fly. The fact he hasn't played here is absolutely no consequence whatsoever, because I think four of the last five winners have won this tournament on their course debut.
Yep.
So don't worry about that. And he just said, I love playing tight par 70s, which are tree line, because it reminds me of my home course, Delhi Country Club, mm-hmm, where, you know, he's won there in the past, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's got a cracking record there, yeah.
And he says these kind of courses, which are framed with trees, are quite tight, and when it's not all about pure power, just suit my game. So I think Lahiri is a good shout this week. I'm tinkering with lots of different other names, but two at big prices I do like the look of. Whether they make the final squad, I'm not sure. But there's a chap by the name of Denny McCarthy who I've been keeping a close tab on. And McCarthy is sitting at 250-1 with Paddy Power, eight places each way. So biggest price available and the biggest amount of each way places. Eight places each way on Denny McCarthy. And he's a natural putter. You can just see the way that he plays the game, and you can see that his strength is putting. And putting from all of the key distances, like I'm looking at 5 to 10 feet and 15 to 20 feet, there seems to be some correlation. And they often say here that you read, oh, the greens are beautiful, the greens are superb. And I think it does just appeal to guys that have a natural ability with the flat stick. And McCarthy seems to be one of those. And I also read a lot, and I've read this over a number of years, they reckon that this is, in terms of just the profile of the tournament and the laid-back nature of it and whatever, they say it feels very much like a web.com event to a lot of the players. And that might kind of explain why a lot of the elite guys turn up here and don't do a lot.
Yeah.
But when you look at a lot of the guys that do tend to do well here, is a lot of web.com graduates play well at this tournament. And they, you know, I don't know, it might be something to do with the fact that they feel that it's, you know, it's like to the level of the level that they were playing at last year and where they grew up. So there's something in that. And the thing with McCarthy I like is he was 10th. His record reads, missed cut last week at the National. Now, that was his home event, actually, Denny McCarthy. That was his home event because he comes from Maryland. Clearly, a lot of pressure on him, didn't perform. But he was 47th at the Travellers, and he was 22nd after 54 holes. So he was in the mix. And the outing before that at St Jude, he finished 18th, and he was 10th after 54 holes.
Yeah, his name keeps popping up, doesn't it?
It does pop up, yeah, absolutely. Quite a few, you know, quite a few top 10 rounds in there of the day, which I like. And when I look at his numbers, he's 26 for stroke gain putting, he's 26th for putts within 5 to 10 feet, and he's 75th for putts 15 to 20 feet. So I think McCarthy's the kind that might pop up at a price. The other thing I love about McCarthy, if I look at his results on web.com tracks, which have been played at altitude, he appears on a lot of the leaderboards.
Mm.
So I think one there that I do like the look of. And the other guy I like at a big price, I'm seeing... what am I seeing? I'm seeing 150-1 on him. Is our German... And I've been looking for a tournament to place this guy at for months. You know this, Paul.
Yeah.
I won't be able to pronounce him. He's 125-1 with Coral, seven places each way. Paddy Power have got him as Shaw's 100-1 at eight places, so they know. Stefan Jaeger, the German. And he's an interesting guy. You look at his record on the web.com. He only does well on courses that feature bent grass greens. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
That's a given. And also, he's just a phenomenal winner on the web.com. He's won four PGA Tour titles. And he's won at scores of 30 under par, 19 under par, 14 under par, and 16 under par.
Mm-hmm.
That last one was the Knoxville Open, which he actually won this year. So even though he's playing the PGA Tour, he's been struggling. So he dropped down to the Knoxville Open, and he reeled that one off at 16 under par.
Yeah.
Knoxville Open, which is in the neighbouring state of Tennessee, which is where he went to college, and features pure bent grass greens. And it was interesting last week, on a course that I think was far too tight, too technical for him, he finished in 13th spot. And he actually, I think he was 44th in the field for GIR, and he was putting like he does on bent grass, putting beautifully. Mm. So I think I might put Jaeger in there as well, because again, looking at his web.com record, places like Utah, top 10 finish, and also at the Mexico event that they play down at El Bosque, which is just outside of the capital city, which is at 6,000 feet of altitude. He finished fourth a few years ago. So he can clearly do the maths as well. And I've been looking for this bent grass golf course where scoring 16, 17 under, that kind of area.
Yeah, it's going to suit him.
It looks as well, I didn't mention this, it looks like it could be quite soft in terms of conditions, and I don't think that's going to do him any harm either.
Yeah.
So I think I'm definitely going to put McCarthy and Jaeger in there at big prices.
One point with Jaeger, because of the way they spell his name, you may find him listed with some other bookies. I've just found him at 200 to 1.
Yeah, no, yeah, they've split him.
Yeah. So is that with Unibet right now? Unibet and Treble A, who use the same pricing structure, you're getting 200s with six places. So, and again, that's all of the bookies aren't up right yet. So yes,
it's funny, isn't it? The guys that have put a lot of extra places up have slashed his price.
Mm. Yeah.
And then the guys that are at 5 or 6 have got him at 200 to 1.
Yeah.
Interesting guy. He was on the No Laying Up podcast last week.
So, oh, okay.
Was it?
Yeah, so I think...
Okay. What did you glean from that?
He actually kind of half-jokingly told that story about dropping down to the web.com tour event, winning it, and then coming back up to the PGA Tour. He said, I'd say the guys didn't thank me for doing that last year, you know, when he did it. Well, yeah, I it was kind of a driving listen, and I wasn't really thinking about it, but the lads on the, Chris and the guys on No Laying Up always joke about anybody who's a guest on their show gets a podcast bump, you know, their performance gets a bump that week.
Yeah.
And I'm why not be superstitious? And I always keep an eye out in particular for people. And it seems to have rubbed off on them.
Yeah,
it's just that I just like a couple of these web.com grads, because you just look at the record here, you read the interviews, they say, you know, this pretty much isn't the biggest tournament on the PGA Tour. They're not huge crowds, and it just feels more like a web.com event. The scoring's relatively easy, the course isn't too difficult, there's width off the tee, greens are large, and you do get a lot of web.com players just popping up. And I think, because he's a natural putter, you just get the feeling that if someone was to pop up, it could be him. So, yeah. Another one I do like, and I'm going to sleep on what I need to do, is potentially Austin Cook, who was sixth a few weeks ago at St. Jude, a backdoor sixth. Then again, his web.com record at altitude is phenomenal. Again, he's a very, very natural putter, Austin Cook.
Yeah, 80s.
You might remember he won the McGladrey Classic, as I call it, the one at Sea Island at the end of last year.
Yeah, yeah.
He's got the guy on Twitter, Kip Henley, is it? Who's on Twitter quite a lot. He's his caddy. And I just get the feeling with Cook, he's 80 to 1, but he's 33rd for strokes gained putting, and he's 14th. Between 5 and 10 feet. And again, he's another, I think, that could pop up.
Mm. Yeah, he's a good player, Cook.
What have you got in mind, Paul? Because I know you'll have a couple that you like at this.
Yeah, I've only backed one so far, which was Zach Blair, who was third going into Sunday last week. And he started the final round a couple of shots behind Molinari. And they went in completely different directions. So
he blew up
Ryan. So where Molinari shot 62, he was 15 shots worse and shot 77. But
did you see that tweet he sent out where he's just handing money out?
Yeah.
There was a character on there handing out dollars to everyone.
That was from That's from Dumb and Dumber.
He's very good
on Twitter, Zach, and apparently, I mean, he's a big course architecture fan, and he's very eager to get to this golf course this week. So, there's a guy who has very high motivation this week because you know that'll have stung what happened to him on Sunday.
Yeah, absolutely.
His round on Saturday was so impressive. He was absolutely puring the golf ball. So
the first 3 days, he was really, really good. Sunday's just a blip.
You know, golf. Some days, as you say in the Big Lebowski, some days you eat the bar, and some days the bar eats you. You know, or something like that. And he just one of those rounds that just gets you. So I have him on my shortlist as well, Paul. On the basis of all those factors.
Absolutely. I thought a 200-1.
Oh, yeah.
Given that he just needs to turn out a final one round around, I thought that was worth taking a risk. So.
And we know he's a short game expert.
Oh, he is.
This is the thing with this tournament. You can either be a ball striker that's informed the flat stick, or you can be a total short game animal who's barely hitting any greens, but is scrambling, making pars, and making plenty of birdies with the putter.
Yeah.
It's one of those courses where anybody can win.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So yeah, I agree with
that. So I like Blair. I back Blair. The other two that I am toying with are a little more risky. Well, Blair's risky in itself.
What, riskier than 200-1?
Peter Malnati and...
Oh, you love him. Yeah.
And Daniel Summerhayes. So if you can look past the miscut strings from both of those guys, then I think there may be some value in there. But
again, excuse my language, shit-hot putters.
Mm. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, I may have a couple of quid on those guys to finish in the top 7 or 8, depending on what the prices are, but between the respective bookies. But yeah, the one I have backed is Zach Blair.
I think it's a particularly bad betting heat, I have to say. It doesn't fill me with much enthusiasm this way.
Yeah, or particularly good if you can pluck out one of these big 100, 200 to 1 winners.
Absolutely.
Anyone catch your eye, Barry?
Yeah, I like Andrew Putnam.
Mm.
He wouldn't be an extremely hot putter. I was just checking there. He's 60th or 61st. Yeah, but you know, he's had a lot of good performances, and he's been playing some really good golf for a long time. He's second there 4 weeks ago, 27th last week. So you know, he might kind of fancy grabbing this one in a slightly weakened field.
I was on him last week and he was in semi-contention come Sunday and he just shot a bad round on Sunday. So he's still playing some good golf, Putnam.
Yeah, he's not far away, Putnam.
The other one I kind of like the look of is Patrick Rogers, but he always seems to flatter us to deceive a little bit, doesn't he, Rogers? That's my view on him, potentially. What do you think?
Anytime I've been on him, it's been nothing but disappointment.
Yeah.
So, with that said,
can you believe in an event of this quality you can get Kevin Kisner at 66-1? That's a big price for Kisner, but that just shows you how badly he's been.
Yeah, he's not there, is he? Yeah,
there's nobody home, is there?
There's a bit of value down there. Danny Lee at 66s as well is an interesting one.
Yeah, he's been playing quite well. Mm. He's another one I'm tying with. Potentially. So, as you always say, Paul, sleep on it.
Yeah.
Get up at the crack of dawn and make some final decisions, I think.
Yes, when it's all clearer.
Well, who won the football, by the way?
Earlier, Brazil beat Mexico 2-0.
They did? Yeah. 2-0.
Unless they got a goal in dead injury time, but yeah.
It's looking quite good, isn't it, for teams on the weaker side of the draw, but we kind of digress. I'm talking about England, clearly.
you can say that a day early, Steve. I expect
we'll lose tomorrow, and that'll be that.
But not long after this time tomorrow night, I expect it will be doom and gloom.
Right. Anything else to add, chaps?
No, all good. Best of luck for your bets this week, chaps.
Yeah, best of luck to everybody. Best of luck to listeners, and we will be back again next week for it'll be the Scottish Open, won't it?
Yep.
And the John Deere Classic. So look out for episode 35 next week. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again soon. Cheers.